Coming up on Total Access, The Locker Room.
I was like, in my mind, are you kidding me? This is the size of the human beings that I have to block now in the NFL. So day one, I was already like, okay, I need to go back to Central Michigan because I belong here.
Welcome to NFL Total Access, The Locker Room. I'm Michael Robinson, and today I'm flying solo without my wingman head coach, Brian Billett. But I've got a great guest coming up, and we're going to let you guys in on what players and coaches really talk about inside the locker room today. I'm joined by one of the finest left tackles to ever play the game of football, right? And one of my former teammates, a former Niner when I was a Niner, six-time Pro Bowler, San Francisco great, Joe Staley. Let's welcome Joe Staley to the show. What's going on, big dog? First of all, I know we threw this on you when we first got on. Locker room story, dog. We start every podcast with a locker room story, okay? And again, not one of those ones you say on TV. Okay, that's the PG rated version. We need, you know, PG-13. All right, not R, but PG-13 on this show. Right. So what you got?
Okay, locker room stories. There's a million to go through. A lot of them are R. I say the PG-13 one. Okay, I'll just paint a picture. I came from Central Michigan University. Yeah. Small school, was very, very intimidated to be in in the NFL. You know, I was not one of the kids that, yes, I was
one of
those
kids. You didn't seem that way though, bro. You came in with a little personality, maybe because we were sorry as hell at the time, and you know,
My whole life is a facade. My whole life, but it's been a big facade.
Get the hell out of here, man.
No one needs to know the real me, and I don't know the real me. So I came in Central Michigan, super intimidated to be in the NFL. All right, this is a long story. My rookie year.
Yeah.
I get there. I didn't really play anybody that was decent in college. And didn't really have any understanding of the size of the human beings I was about to go against in the NFL. So I get there, and the first day, super nervous. You know, my dad's like, hey, make sure you're on time, you know, and all that Michigan small town mentality, like, make sure you're on time, be respectful, and show up. So I got there like probably an hour and a half before I had to be there. By far the first person in the locker room I did on day one of my whole entire NFL. So I get in there, I'm sitting at my stool. And Isaac Sopawaga comes in.
Isaac.
Who I did not know at the time. And
he's a large human being.
Isaac, 6'2", probably 330 pounds, and just rocked up. And so he comes in there, and I get up, and I'm like, hey, nice to meet you. My name is Joe, just a rookie this year, like super nervous and everything. And I'm like, what position you play? And in my mind, I'm like, you know, he must be a guard or a nose tackle or whatever.
Somebody you got to block.
And he goes, I'm a defensive end. And I was like, in my mind, I'm like, are you kidding me? Am I allowed to swear at this thing?
Yeah, man.
I'm like, are you kidding me? This is the size of the human beings that I have to block now in the NFL. So day one, I was already like, okay. I need to go back to Central Michigan because I belong here trying to block 330-pound behemoths. Then, fast forward the same exact day, guess who's the number two person in that walks in the locker room?
Who?
Brian Young.
Oh, B.Y., that's right. B.Y.,
the all-time just...
With a six-pack.
I'm here to destroy you kind of body. And he walks in, and I'm like, hey, nice to meet you. And then B.Y., just one of the greatest human beings. I spent 1 year with him, but one of the greatest human beings I've ever met still to this day. Just the nicest dude ever, but also intimidating. I didn't know who B.Y. was, and I was like just getting a look at his size and then comparing it with Isaac Sopawaga's size. And I was like, what the hell did I get myself into? You expect me to be good? You expect me in the first round to be good? Like, I gotta tell him, like, hey, I don't know.
No, man, you won't think of that, man.
Then we go to the first team meeting. And I don't know if you remember that first team meeting. I do. But it was the first team meeting in the offseason. Uh-huh. You were in there. And the whole entire time, there was one person I was like, there's a guy that I got to meet. And I'm also very scared to meet because of his reputation. And that was Larry Allen.
L.A.
Yeah. Who I knew just because my grandfather was a huge Cowboys fan in the 90s and everything. And he would always tell me about him. And then I was like, I'm going to be on the same team as Larry Allen. But he didn't show up. until well after the team meeting started. And
yeah.
I was like,
and it was okay. And it was okay. Yeah.
He could do whatever the hell he wanted. Yeah. I learned that after the fact. And so he comes in like 30 minutes late in a cutoff basketball jersey, because that's all he wore.
Always.
Basketball jersey. He came in and I was like, oh man. Because coming from Central Michigan,
yeah,
you know, college, if you were late to a meeting, and I'm sure, actually, I found out later, if you were late to a meeting in the NFL, it did matter. It only just, I'd found out also it mattered who you were.
Who you were, yeah.
And L.A. walked in late, and he was one of those guys that definitely was a who you were kind of guy. So he walked in and just laughed, and everybody went insane. And then yeah. my mind as well went, this is an NFL offensive lineman right here. This guy was the biggest human being I had ever seen in my life. Cut off, just laughing, deepest voice I've ever been, a rook. Yep. I'll never forget that, a rook. Yeah. Yes, sir. That whole first year, I don't know about what you thought of me, but my whole first year, I was probably the most scared and timid human being I've ever
Joe,
been in my
life. We knew you were the future, bro. I knew I was probably on my way out there in a few years.
Well,
but
thank you. Cause
yeah, no, seriously.
You're telling me this, because I definitely was not thinking I was a future of anything.
Yeah. What about the Bentley LA had where he's spitting peanuts and dip and stuff on the floor? It's a Bentley.
On the Bentley that was also like, I think he had custom interior that was like fur. Like he had like a million chinchillas that he must have spit and across his floor and just spitting seeds, chew
everything.
On top of that, so as a rookie, you have rookie duties in your rookie year.
Oh, yeah.
And my rookie duties were basically to do whatever they told me and get them, you know, snacks for the room. We're going out to dinner. You're buying dinner. You're getting alcohol for the plane. All this stuff. All this typical stuff that rookies do. But also a thing that I had to do was to clean up the room after the meetings, which was fine because most of the guys weren't messy and they would take their stuff and they would do whatever. But LA, he didn't chew. He didn't like actually like he spit seeds and chewed at the same time. I don't know how he did.
Me neither. Where is it? Right.
Where is the room for him? He's a big human being, so he's got a lot of room. So he would also not spit it into like a cup or anything. He would just have a this is funny too. So I was like, wow, Larry Allen, still in year 14, takes great notes, because I always saw him like had a piece of paper out and he always had whatever. Well, I found out first day he wasn't even spitting into a cup or anything. He would just spit onto the piece of paper on his desk and then leave it. And so I had to go in there and
they made you do it?
Yes.
Oh, no, I wouldn't have done that.
That was such a wuss that I did not even stand up for myself. But also in this moment, still as a 36-year-old man, and Larry's doing that.
Yeah.
I don't want anybody to judge me. Larry Allen is the most intimidating person that I still to this day has ever met in my life.
Yeah, so, Larry is
don't judge
awesome.
Me, don't know me.
Yeah, Larry is awesome. I still talk to him from time to time whenever I get a chance to get around him. But this is what I wanted to ask you, Joe. Actually, I've asked Frank Gore this question because, you know, we were teammates there at the same time. It seemed like when I left out of that locker room in 2010, man, y'all made one change. The head coach, Coach Singletary, left. Coach Harbaugh came in. And then you're in the NFC Championship game, dude. Like, what changed, man? Because I always tell people the talent was already in the locker room.
Yeah.
You know, Scott McLuhan had built a winner. Something changed, though, when Jim Harbaugh took the helm.
Well, I think it's twofold. I think, like you said, there was already the talent that was there. Mm-hmm. We had already built that roster with McLuhan through, you know, you got free agents like Justin Smith came. Yep. They were dialed in with that system. I mean, we had Delaney Vernon, like we had skill guys all over the place. Crab, was Crab there?
Yeah, Crab was there, man.
He was already there too.
Yeah. I mean,
honestly, the talent that we won the games with was already there. Like we weren't leaning on any rookies to get us there. You know, our offensive line, we did add Upati and Anthony Davis. Boone kind of came into his own. We had a better offensive line when Harbaugh got there, but it was honestly, man, if I'm looking back on it.
But Boone was already there. I played with Boone. Like, he was just a backup.
Yeah, but he was not, he didn't like take it seriously.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, takes some guys, you know, a couple of years to kind of like realize the opportunity that they have. I think it's like when they realize that, like, oh, I can get cut.
Yeah.
You know, they don't owe me a scholarship anymore. This is like a job. They can just cut me. So, I mean, he was coming into his own. He's playing really good football. Honestly, I think the thing that changed was that everything, just as far as a talent wise, like everybody was hitting their prime at the right time. And then Harbaugh came in there and we really like bought into that whole entire like mantra that he had his first year of like, who's got it better than us? Nobody, like all that stuff.
Something special about this team now.
Yes, sir.
It's remarkable going on here, okay? Yes, our minds played our greatest game out there. Yes, yes, yes. Our minds played our greatest game out there.
Who's got it better than us? Who's got it better than us? Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!
Year one, everybody loved it. And we all bought in. It was like a complete like team, like, let's go. Like, this doesn't get better than this. Like, everybody, and then we started winning some games. And it kind of just snowballed throughout that. We got to gain more and more confidence. And then we believe more and more what the coaches are saying. And that's with any coach, really. But then year two, you know, it was kind of like, all right, this message is the same. And it kind of became like a little broken record.
Yeah.
But we were winning. And we went to the Super Bowl. And so we were like, no one's going to say anything because this is awesome. We love winning. And then year three, it was just kind of like, all right. And that's kind of when you started seeing a lot of the locker room division happen. The tone of the locker room just got completely like almost not, it just drowned out. It was weird. It was just a weird, yeah. We were still good. We were still in the NFC championship game, but it was like the dynamics in the locker room was completely different than it was his first year to his third year.
I don't want to necessarily get into all what happened with Kaepernick, but I just wanted, from your perspective, how did the locker room take what was going on with him and kneeling and all of that type of stuff? Was it a supportive thing? Was it something where, you know, the team came together and you talked about it and said, hey, you know what I mean? But like, how did that get digested through the locker room? You know what I mean?
Yeah, it was 100%. We had a lot of, like, when we first came out, or like when it first happened, I mean, we had a lot of, like, you know, you have your football team structure basically with, like, we have our what we call like a leadership committee or whatever. It's like every guy that's like the veteran dude of a position group room. And so we all came together and we communicated about what was going on and everything. But it all came from like a perspective of A, understanding, you know, because we wanted like everything to go on and we wanted to like understand what the issues were. Because, you know, before, you know, it's hindsight 2020, we obviously know, but at the time it was like, what are we raising awareness of? And, you know, there's some guys that had certain feelings about this, the anthem and everything about the way to do it. But then there was a way to just understand about what was going on. And so there was a ton of communication that was done early on. And then from that point on, when we got Cap's perspective and like, what do you want to do? It was 100%, at least from my perspective. And I feel the team as well, like supportive of backing him and what he wanted to do and accomplish and getting his message out.
So it wasn't divisive.
It was on its own, like the media attention. We honestly weren't, I don't know if it was on my part, like being naive, but it completely exploded. Obviously it became a real hot button issue for everybody to talk about all the time. But I think from, you know, it was definitely a moment of support. There wasn't any division in the locker room.
Yeah.
There wasn't any of that distraction stuff going on. I think some guys maybe got a little bit tired just of every single question always being about that, and where it was like, hey, we address this. We're supportive of this. This is our answer. And, you know, we also need to, you know, ask us about football as well.
That's what we do, right?
but we understood. It wasn't like we was like naive to the fact like, hey, we don't want to talk about this. Like, you understand, you know, that's how you get your message out and how you get your message spread. And, you know, as football players, we have a responsibility to bring light to a lot of different issues and injustices that are going out. And I think that's, you know, at the core of it, what that, you know, the initial thing was, and, you know, kind of taking on from there.
Now, Joe, we just finished talking about Kaepernick, a quarterback that you had. Now I'm going to fast forward to Jimmy G. You know, I like Jimmy. Jimmy G is a handsome man, man. He looks good back there, quarterback throwing that football, man. But our old team did make an aggressive move. They traded up to get the number 3 pick. Why do people doubt Jimmy G so much? Like, when he plays, you guys are good. You went to a Super Bowl. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, what's all the doubt about? Why? How come, you know, and I'm hearing this from fans, Mike, Rob, how come they just can't settle on Jimmy G and that's our guy like other teams do with their quarterback?
I don't want to put out anything. I love Jimmy took us to the Super Bowl. He was a quarterback when we went to the Super Bowl. But I think one of the things he said was when he plays. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I think in any position, you know, if you miss a lot of games, I think, you know, the old cliche is your best ability is your availability, which is, you know, there's a double-edged sword to that.
Yeah.
Because if you're, you know, if you're Tom Brady and Drew Brees, I don't care how often you get hurt, but you're going to still be the starting quarterback. You know, I think maybe that's a little bit of that to do there. I just want to have something that goes on in the plan. But I think, too, it's the way the contracts are structured these days in the NFL, it's you're almost better off at having a rookie quarterback on a rookie deal and kind of building the team around him that way.
That's how we want it. That's how we want it.
And if you look at the quarterbacks that have gone in the NFL that have been in the Super Bowl, I mean, Tom Brady's probably the only one that's not on a rookie deal that has been there. You know,
because he never wants to make the highest in the league, though. So Tom's, to me, is in a whole different category, right?
Yeah, but he's still not on a rookie contract, how those rookie contracts are structured. You know, I think Pat was on his, Mahomes was on his. I mean, who's won it besides Brady and Pat?
Russell was on his when we won it.
Russell was on his when he won.
But that's really it.
I can't really think of, you know, too many guys. I don't know. It's just, I think it's just the way the NFL works now. I think everybody's kind of looking for the newest and greatest. And, you know, I think the one thing, too, is that Kyle, and I think any head coach wants this, especially when you're such an offensive-minded guy like Kyle Shanahan is that he would love to kind of handpick his own guy. And I think just looking from my perspective, I haven't really been paying a ton of, you know, of attention to what's going on, but it seems like there's a lot of great quarterback options out there this year in this year's draft. So now I'm sure they are excited about probably three of them. If they're trading up to three, they got three guys that they think are, you know, they're handpicked guys that they could, you know, go and for the next 4, 5, 6 years, you know, be very, very competitive out. And then you look at the roster built up. I mean, Fred Warner's coming up for a huge contract. Nick Bosa's coming up for a huge contract. You can't have, you know, 90% of your contract in three guys, you know? Yeah. So if you keep on Jimmy's contract, it's just the way the NFL is these days. So.
Good. I know what you're talking about, man. You're talking about business. That's the business side that oftentimes people don't always talk about. But you mentioned
I will say this. Like, a lot of times fans get – they think it's just Madden all the time, you know? Like, it's just plug and play, like, forced trades, like, all that stuff. Like,
that ain't the case.
There is a huge business side of it. And I think the Niners obviously are in a great situation with their contract negotiation. Mm-hmm. He upset me so much when I was playing, you know.
Barack, yeah.
But he's one of the best at
creating, man.
You know, salary cap stuff under the cap and making sure that they're all dialed in. He's kind of a mad genius with the way he kind of wired and you know, dials in those contracts. So, I mean, there's a lot behind the scenes as far as business goes, and it's not even the fact that they just don't like him, you know. Yeah. I think it's just business.
It's just business, man. Now, you mentioned Kyle Shanahan, right? Talk about his play calling style or just his offense, man. Because I ain't gonna lie, Joe, I think from a leverage standpoint, I'm not sure there's another play caller that out leverages a defense better than Kyle Shanahan. Just talk about his play calling style. I've heard that he likes to let you guys know his thinking, you know what I mean? So that you guys are excited about the plays he's gonna call that week. Just talk about Kyle Shanahan a little bit.
Yeah, he's as far as X's and O's and just understanding a defense and how a defense wants to defend and how he can best attack that defense. I've never met anybody better. I mean, it was very evident early on is that how he structures his offense. It's not just like one thing is that a lot of coordinators will be like, this is our system. We're running it and it's going to be successful no matter what. Right. Like Kyle has a wide variety. It's like a wide zone scheme, but we have a wide variety, and I say we, I'm not even playing.
Yeah, them, it's all good, man.
They have a wide variety of styles and ways to do the wide zone scheme. So if like for example, a defensive end wants to play a wide nine technique and really like keep everything in. He has different combination blocks that he'll set up between the tack or between the tight end and the fullback to make sure that they can still get that stretch. And it's all about stretch. It's all about really getting that second level linebackers to run. And if they are sitting there flat footed and they're able to play their gaps in the middle of the defense, then a lot of this stuff doesn't work as well. And I think you saw that. I mean, that's why Raheem is such a great running back for that system, because he is so fast at the edge and he runs so fearless that it is paramount for those guys to, you know, get that stretch. Those linebackers have to run. And when they run, then that's when his like play action stuff, all that stuff to Kittle in the middle of the field, he will get guys out of position and then immediately take advantage of them overplaying stuff. And that was one of the coolest things too, is like he would say in our, like he'd strip our first 20, 25 plays and he would run a play at like third play of the game and be like, we're probably going to get 2 yards of this,
but I don't set that up.
He's like, we're running this play, like the seventh play. And he's like, all right, we ran these two plays. If you guys run it right, you come off with the right speed and everything we've done, play 10's a touchdown.
And we would How many times did it hit?
Exactly. It would be like exactly right. I mean, he still says like the way he installs his run stuff too is like, I don't really care about your technique. What I care about is speed. And so like,
oh man, that's freedom.
Yeah, but he was like, so that's why, I mean, Trent is so good and they were able to get a left tackle in there because he needs that speed on the run game, like threaten that defensive end. So the linebacker now is threatened because he's out of the gap. So he's overrunning. Everything is just like, he wants the defense to be panicking.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, so, that's exciting. I like, his offense is awesome to play in.
Well, I love that you were talking about the run game, man, because obviously I play fullback, you're a tackle. You know, we love to run the football. Do you ever feel slighted some? And when I say that, check me out, though, Joe. When you went to the Super Bowl a while back with Frank Gore and those guys, Frank ran the ball damn near down to the 7-yard line.
Yeah, he did.
Passes thrown. And then you look at the other Super Bowl with Kansas City, you had Tyrann Mathieu come out after the game and say, man, I'm glad they stopped running the ball because we probably would have lost. You ever feel like, damn, man, if we just would have ran the football, I might have 2 Super Bowls sitting here right now.
Yeah, I definitely think the first one.
Yeah.
I think we definitely would have had one if we won that one, if we ran that one. Still haven't gotten over that.
I know, man. I know.
I will say this, though. We did have a run called in that Super Bowl. It was a 2nd down from the 5 or 4, and we ran quarterback power.
Yes.
So, but they called, we had to call a timeout because the play got in so late. But that was the whole offense and defense actually ran the play, and we didn't hear the whistle till after, and it was a walk-in touchdown.
Oh, so that gotta hurt, dog.
You know, I saw Justin Smith and Daniel Kilgore this past weekend. Okay. I was at a wedding, and we just kept on saying that we all were over. Justin lost Super Bowl. Kilgore lost one with Kansas City last year, so he was 0-2, and I was 0-2. So we're just. We said if we ever bought a boat, we're just going to put 0-2.
0-2. That'd be sweet, man. All right, so look, Coach Billick is usually with me on the podcast, but he does have a message. Let me get it right. I'm going to read it to you. Right. The Ravens wanted to draft you, but Billick's old defensive coordinator screwed him up, talking about the coach that drafted. Come on, man. Give me the head coach that drafted. No, it's Coach Nolan. There you go. There you go, Coach Nolan. How does it feel knowing you could have had a Super Bowl win instead of 2 Super Bowl losses? Because you know, Baltimore would have picked up.
Who's to say? Maybe I would have been the reason why the Ravens.
Man, get out of here, man. Stop killing yourself, Joe. Come on, man.
Speaking of that, I don't know how the heck those guys blocked Alden Smith. I actually talked to him the other day, too.
Really?
That dude was a freak. Were you there when he was there?
So when he first got there, I was gone, but I had to block him a lot of times, and dude, I missed a lot. The dude was long, bro. He never let you get into his body.
He was
ever.
So
I hated blocking him. I hated blocking him, dog. So, retirement.
I will say this. I was going, so I knew that I was going to be, or I didn't know, but I had a feeling I was going to get picked by the Ravens at 29 that
that draft.
You did? You had a feeling that the Ravens were coming?
Yeah, they, because the, I don't know, someone there said, like, to my agent, they said, hey, if Joe's still there at 29, he's our pick.
And it was Coach Billick.
And he's our pick. So I have an uncle that lives in Baltimore area. And, you know, I'm not going to get into this story.
Why? You right there, man.
You might see it.
I was like,
oh, no. I'm going to be right next to him.
You got
to fire myself up to be there. But I was like, oh, he's going to be over all the time. So when San Francisco traded up, I was like,
yes, Unc ain't coming by my crib out here, man.
You're going to be over all the time. I love you, Uncle Jim, but you know you're going to be over at my house every single day.
Hey, Joe, thank you for coming by, man. This was awesome, man. They telling me we got to run, man, but we could talk all day about stuff. And I want to say before we go, Coach Mike Nolan, I know I might have forgot your name for a second, but he brought me into the league. He brought you into the league, Joe, so we're definitely grateful for Coach Nolan. That'll do it for this week's episode of Total Access, The Locker Room. Joe, thanks for stopping by, big dog. You got to do this a little bit more often, okay?
Yeah, I'd love to.
You retired now. You got to get into your media side, man. Come join me, big dog.
So, nothing to do.
Nothing to do.
Co-host. I know you're running solo right now.
I know. Well, Coach Billick on TV, man, but that's all good. It's all good. That'll do it for this week's episode of Total Access, The Locker Room. For more insight with the locker room point of view, check out the latest episodes every Wednesday and Friday on Apple and Spotify.